It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bejarano.
Welcome to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bejarano. And joining us on the show today is Dr. Jonathan Baugh, ER Medical Director and Physician, and Quality Nurse Corrine Bejarano from Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Today we're going to be talking about sepsis. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 541-567-6500. Just so our listeners can get a better understanding of sepsis, here are some statistics I thought I'd share with you before we actually jump into questions and answers from Corrine and Dr. Baugh. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, sepsis is defined as the body's extreme response to infection. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few moments. The CDC also reports that 1.5 million people in the U.S. get sepsis each year, and of those, 250,000 die from sepsis each year. Essentially, that is one in three patients who die in the hospital have sepsis. Those are some pretty sobering statistics if you think about that. So, Dr. Baugh, I just gave the CDC's very brief definition of what sepsis is, which seems a little vague. Could you actually describe sepsis and what it is for our listening audience so they can gain a better understanding of what it is?
Sure. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me today. I appreciate it. Can you hear me well? Are you there?
Yep. Yeah, I'm there. We can hear you.
Okay. Thank you. Hey, so sepsis really sort of revolved around the fact that it's an infection. It's not so much a specific disease state, but it's more an infection or its response to an infection that your body would normally have, you know, an infection by a bacteria or a virus. Sepsis is an overreaction by your body's own immune system. Maybe you could get influenza or pneumonia, get a bladder infection, a kidney infection. Maybe it's just an abscess, and all these things lead you to be sick, and as your body reacts to that, then you gain what is defined as sepsis, which is your heart's beating too fast, or your temperature is too high, or maybe it's even too low, or your blood pressure is too low. So all these things are sort of a definition. And so when we get a certain state of illness, then we get what is called septic. And so where people start thinking, well, I have or I've caught sepsis, instead what they're saying, what we should be learning is that you're ill, you're sick with some sort of infection, usually bacterial infection, and then that leads you to be in a very sort of compromised state, if that helps the definition and the understanding of sepsis at all.
Hmm. I think that actually probably gives a pretty good broad overview of what it is. So I have another question for you, Dr. Baugh. How long have medical professionals actually known about sepsis?
That's a multifold, or at least a twofold question right there. If we talk about the concept, the very vague concept of sepsis, we could really probably go back all the way to the founding of medicine, back with Hippocrates about 3,000 years, where he started talking about about infection, where he used the word sepsi, which meant to make rotten, sort of the father of infection in the sort of the newer modern age would be maybe a man by the name of a physician Semmelweis, who learned that simple contamination from one patient to another led to infection within a separate patient. So he did a great observation that showed that his medical students, when they would be down doing dissections with the cadavers and then come up and see his OBGYN patients in about the 1850s, those patients were getting sick. But if he just had those medical students just wash their hands, then they were cutting down on mortality. I think the numbers were they dropped the mortality rate from 18% down to 2.5% just by washing their hands. And so he was the first one to sort of identify this concept of infection and sepsis as we start thinking of it now. it kind of really gained some traction in the 70s and the 1970s. In fact, in 1850, when Semmelweis first kind of came up with this idea, his colleagues really shunned him and said that he was crazy. The hand washing and contamination really had nothing to do with infection. But as we took his basic understanding, expanded on it later, I think the concept that we think of as sepsis has really sort of taken hold in the 70s as far as a national acknowledgement.
So this kind of begs another question. I know that hand hygiene is kind of a concept that healthcare systems have embraced, and they really encourage their medical professionals to, you know, wash their hands before they actually see patients. Is that something that Good Shepherd actually encourages?
Oh, absolutely. Now, if you think of it this way, physicians or nurses like myself, you know, or physicians like myself or nurses, go in and see multiple patients, very sick patients, septic patients, every day. And as we walk in and out of a room, we wash our hands as we go in, and we wash our hands as we go out. And that emphasized by Good Shepherd and other medical facilities is the thing that keeps us and other patients healthy and not spreading that contamination.
Great. So I got another question for you, Dr. Baugh. Is sepsis actually contagious?
So when we think about whether or not sepsis is contagious, we really sort of talk about is the disease process that caused that individual to become septic contagious, because sepsis by itself is just our body's reaction or overreaction to any a bacterial viral infection. So the concept of sepsis itself being contagious, it's not, but most of the disease processes that would cause us to become septic are. Say it's a pneumonia or influenza or maybe a different type of abscess or infection, then those probably are contagious. But the actual disease of sepsis, the definition of sepsis, isn't technically contagious.
For our listening audience here, so sepsis isn't necessarily a condition that you catch. Would that be right to say that?
Right. So sepsis isn't a condition you catch. It is a definition of a state. And so you become ill by, you know, any number of disease processes. And then as your body reacts or overreacts to that, the defined definition of sepsis, you know, the high or low blood pressure, or the low blood pressure, the high or low temperature, the high heart rate, the fast breathing rate, and then some laboratory values, those are the things that sort of define sepsis. And so, yeah, it's a disease. I mean, it's not a disease process. It's a state that you're in rather than a true disease that's sort of catchable.
Interesting. I think that, you know, that's probably a pretty common misconception in any community, is that it's something that you could probably catch. But it sounds like it's something that is caused by something else.
No, you're exactly right. And that's a phrase that I hear all the time that is indeed a misconception. People say, well, I caught sepsis, but instead, the right phrase would be that I got septic, or I became septic, or I had sepsis, meaning that I had really bad pneumonia, and during that process, I became so sick that I then fell into the classification of what would be considered septic or having sepsis.
Interesting. So, Corrine, I do have some questions for you, too. It seems like sepsis, at least from my perspective, is getting a lot more media attention. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, absolutely. We are seeing a lot more sepsis come up in the media and attention brought to it. to bring it to light. And I think you hit a key point in your introduction when you were talking about some of the statistics and how this is actually affecting Americans. And that is that 1.6 million people are diagnosed with sepsis each year. And of those, there are 258,000 deaths. And to kind of put that in a little bit more of a perspective that people might understand is that one patient every 20 seconds is diagnosed with sepsis, and one patient every 2 minutes dies of sepsis. So those are very alarming statistics. And even when we are looking at that, you would think there'd be a lot more awareness about sepsis, but only about 55% of United States adults have ever heard of sepsis or know what it is, even though it's the leading cause of death in U.S. hospitals. So the media attention we're seeing, which is, you know, even what we're doing here today, is to help bring awareness to the community of what sepsis is, what causes it, what kind of treatments that we do to help patients that acquire sepsis, and how to prevent it.
Great. Well, so I do have another question for you along those same lines, Dr. Baugh. So is sepsis hospital acquired, or is that something that a patient would get from being in the hospital? Because I've heard that before, too, and I don't know if that's a misconception or if that is true.
So we could say that sepsis could be hospital acquired. It could be community acquired. Meaning that the infection that you get can begin in either place. And then as you become sicker and qualify for that sepsis definition, then you could have been either started within the hospital. So it's not really a hospital-acquired disease state so much as it is often when people are becoming sicker than they are in the hospital.
Okay, interesting. So, Dr. Baugh, I do have another question along those same lines. So, are there varying severity levels of sepsis, and what does that actually look like if there are?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Nick. So, if we talk classically speak about sepsis, there have been some evolution of the terms of sepsis. Right now, we sort of use the phrase the term SIRS, which is Systemic Inflammatory Response System, which is the initial recognition of that, those blood pressure changes, those vital sign changes. And then we can move into sepsis, which is those vital sign changes plus a source of infection. And then we can get into systemic shock, which is where we start seeing sort of end organ dysfunction. Maybe our kidneys are shutting down, so we're not making urine, or we're starting to have problems with our liver. That's a result of the infection. And then the end spectrum of that would also be septic shock plus multi-organ system failure. And that is where we have more than one system, more than one organ system, kidneys, liver, heart, brain, all those things that are causing or having effects by the infection that we've gained that has made us septic. So there are spectrums of sepsis within the definition itself.
Interesting. So, Corrine, I do have another question for you. So how do we recognize and treat sepsis in the hospital?
So one of the key areas when we think about recognizing sepsis is really education. We want to make sure we're educated on what sepsis is, what sepsis looks like, so we can easily identify patients who come into the hospital. So education has been a key component at Good Shepherd, educating our staff and just making them aware. Even though they receive formal training in nursing school or medical school, we just want to bring the awareness to them again. And also a key area that the hospital looked at was developing a screening tool so that all patients that come into the emergency department and are triaged actually have a sepsis screening done on them to identify whether or not they have any of those signs and symptoms that may point a person to think that they may have sepsis. And also, if they were to become an inpatient on one of our inpatient units, we have a screening tool that we screen patients at least once every 12 hours.
Interesting. So what are some of the components involved in that screening tool? Like, what would you look for?
So some of the things that Dr. Baugh mentioned, like the vital sign markers, like elevated heart rate, elevated respiratory rate, an increased or decreased temperature, blood pressure fluctuations. We would also look to see whether or not the physician could identify an infection or that patient even knew that they were being treated with an infection. And then, of course, looking at lab markers from blood work that we've drawn.
Interesting. So, Karina, I guess another follow-up question is, you being a nurse, can nurses actually diagnose sepsis?
So nurses cannot make a medical diagnosis. A physician is ultimately responsible for making a medical diagnosis, and that would be consistent with making a diagnosis of sepsis. But nurses do play a very vital role in the proper assessment of a patient who is potentially septic. And by working proactively with the medical team and in collaboration with physicians, nurses can assist in early recognition and provide timely treatment for sepsis, which is key for patients to survive that.
So ultimately, it's teamwork.
Yes.
Working together. Awesome. Okay, so, Karine, I guess another question I have for you is, how many people does Good Shepherd treat for sepsis each year?
So last year in 2017, Good Shepherd treated approximately 180 patients with a diagnosis of sepsis.
And that can be those varying degrees that Dr. Baugh mentioned?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So, Dr. Baugh, what are some causes of sepsis? I know Karine kind of touched on those a little bit, and you kind of touched on them a little bit too. And I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what do you look for? What are the symptoms that patients or our community members need to be aware of when they come to the hospital to think to even ask the doctor, I think I may be septic or have sepsis? How would you define that for us?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll say this too, one of the things that Karine said is very important here. And while she said, you know, nurses don't diagnose, they are very, very helpful to us as physicians in helping to identify those abnormalities. And that universal or that screening tool that the nurses are using are so helpful for us, because that definition of sepsis is kind of what you're asking about there. And so we would say, patients who have two or more of the following would fall into at least what we would say the beginning of sepsis or that SIRS classification. And if your temperature is over 101 degrees Fahrenheit, or if it's below about 96.8 degrees Fahrenheit, or if your heart rate is more than 90 beats per minute, or if you're breathing more than 20 times per minute, and especially if you already have a defined infectious source, such as a urinary tract infection or pneumonia or even some influenza, those type of things would make us start saying this is sepsis, or at least a SIRS, which is the bottom end spectrum of that sepsis. And so those are the things that when people start saying, you know, my heart rate's fast, my temperature's high, my blood pressure when I check it at home is too low, then they should start thinking about, man, I'm really getting sick. I should probably see a physician.
Okay. That's good advice. So what do you think, Dr. Baugh, is the number one cause of sepsis? Or is it, I know you've mentioned that it's a kind of a myriad of things that can happen in conditions that people have, but is there any one thing, or is it multiple things?
Well, that's a great question, but either pneumonia or a urinary tract infection seem to be the two leading causes that lead people to become sick with sepsis. Now, those are part of the spectrum, obviously, and only a component, but those are the two big areas that have the number one causes of sepsis, is urinary tract infection and community-acquired pneumonia.
Okay. So for those of us in our community here, if you have pneumonia or urinary tract infection and you might have some of the other symptoms that Dr. Baugh mentioned, it might be worth consulting with your primary care physician or actually even coming to the ER. Isn't that correct, Dr. Baugh?
Yeah, that's exactly true. And one of the reasons that that's important to be able to bring up, Nick, is because those are usually the situations where we see the people getting more and more sick. They think, well, you know, I've already been diagnosed with pneumonia. I already know that I'm sick, or I've already been told that I have a bladder infection or a kidney infection. well, maybe you're just not getting better on the treatment that you're on. And as your body starts reacting more and more, and your fever's going up, and your heart rate's getting faster, you probably need to come to the ER. You probably need to call your primary care physician so that you can maybe you need to have your medications changed, or maybe that antibiotic that you've been started on just is not covering you well. And so you need to be seen. And if we can reverse these this system course or this infectious course, then we can get you better. So that's a very important step that you mentioned, Nick. And I think it's important to remember for the audience and the community out there to remember, just because you've been seen and just because you've been diagnosed, if you're getting sicker, then come see us. Help us to help you, you know?
Absolutely. Not to wait and get even worse. So, Corrine, I do have a question for you. With the notoriety of sepsis receiving from the media, I can only imagine that our government and other organizations that regulate healthcare are looking more closely at sepsis in that case. So what organizations is Good Shepherd mandated to report to, or what do we voluntarily report to?
Yeah, that is a great question, because there are organizations that are looking at sepsis and really to bring awareness and just help to educate people of what sepsis is, and it's been going on for many years, actually. It's not something new. In fact, the Surviving Sepsis campaign was actually initiated in 2002, and that started up really to reduce deaths from sepsis by building awareness and improving diagnosis and increasing the use of appropriate treatment for patients so they actually could do what that campaign says, is that they could survive sepsis. And so building off of this campaign in 2016, CMS, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, actually initiated a sepsis quality measure to help hospitals to focus their attention and quality initiatives on actually ensuring compliance with the proper treatment of sepsis. And so Good Shepherd reports all of our quality data, which actually includes sepsis, to CMS. It's not mandated for us because of our critical access licensure, but we actually choose to voluntarily report these measures to CMS, which I think really speaks very highly of the leadership in our organization and just the patient-centered care that Good Shepherd really values.
So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU. Our topic today is sepsis, what it is, what it isn't, and how it's cared for and treated at Good Shepherd. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 541-567-6500. We just got done discussing some of the regulatory agencies that Good Shepherd is required to report sepsis cases to, which is not just Good Shepherd, but it's every health system and organization across the United States, it sounds like, to some degree. And Corrine, how do we make sure our medical staff, physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners have the tools and training they need to be able to treat and diagnose sepsis?
Yeah, so it's really important to make sure that our staff have what they need to identify what sepsis is and to really take the best care possible to the patients that come into our doors. And so one of the ways is to keep up with the current evidence-based practices around sepsis, looking at those organizations that are leading the way in sepsis care and management and following course, and also providing ongoing education or educational opportunities for our staff to be able to learn more about sepsis and kind of that cutting-edge knowledge and technology that's coming out to treat diseases like this. And so we also want to look at our sepsis case reviews. When we look at our sepsis population and those who we treat, we really value the learning opportunities that we can gain from actually reviewing our own patient cases that come in with sepsis.
Interesting. So, Dr. Ball, we did get a question from one of our Facebook followers. And I think this is a good question, and it says, I've heard you can get sepsis from simple things such as a hangnail or a scratch. And I just wanted to ask you, is that correct, or is that kind of a misconception that's out there?
No, so at the basis of it, that is correct, because as we've talked about, it's not so much that you get a scratch from the fence, and the fence has sepsis on it, and you get it scratched and you get sepsis in your system, but instead you might get a scratch that then leads to an infection, that leads to an abscess, that leads to this systemic reaction that we've talked about that is sepsis. So can you become septic, or can you get sepsis from something as simple as a hangnail or an abscess or a scratch on your leg? You can. Those are not the common things that would lead to becoming septic or getting sepsis, but you sure can. As we talked about, it's a spectrum of options. Anything that can make you sick systemically can then lead you to get sepsis.
Interesting. So, Dr. Ball, I do have another question for you. So is sepsis something that is curable once a patient actually acquires the condition?
It is, and Corrine brought up a great point, and that's the Surviving Sepsis campaign. And so when we look at this, one of the things that the Surviving Sepsis campaign has done is reduce the mortality or the death rate associated with sepsis. And that's because we have found through good science that as we follow these principles of fluid rehydration and antibiotic use, then we can cure sepsis. It is curable, and the sooner that we can start treating sepsis, then the greater chance we have of curing it. In fact, if you follow within the Surviving Sepsis campaign, because this timeline is so important, there are timelines within that Surviving Sepsis campaign. If you come to the hospital and you qualify for this SIRS criteria or the sepsis criteria that we've talked about, we want to be doing things at certain time frames, within 3 hours and within 6 hours and within 24 hours. We want to be doing certain things to be able to improve the chances of curing your sepsis.
Interesting. So what are some of those things, Dr. Baugh, that you just kind of mentioned that you would do at those different increment time frames that would help? I guess, what is it, treating sepsis essentially, or is it testing for it? What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's actually both. So that's a perfect question. So it's looking for, testing for, identifying and treating. Right? So as the patient arrives, as Corrine had mentioned before, they're going to go through, every patient basically goes through a screening tool to be able to check their vital signs, and if their vital signs match up with our criteria of the high or low temperature, the fast heart rate, the rapid breathing, then they start moving down the path. And by the three-hour mark, we should have blood cultures drawn, we should have a lactic acid level drawn, we should be having them started on antibiotics, and we should have them starting to have some fluid resuscitation. And then we redraw a lactic acid, which is a marker within our bloodstream to start measuring the severity of infections as well as other things. And we should be looking at the level of our white blood cell count, which helps to identify our infections. Maybe there are some things like the CRP, a C-reactive protein in our blood. There's a bunch of laboratory data that will be tested during that process, but the big time frame there is that three-hour mark. When you come to the hospital, we want to be having that fluid resuscitation. We want some antibiotics. We want blood cultures. We want lactic. And then we have some repeat laboratory done at that six-hour mark, and then over the next 24-hour mark, we want to be looking at some of the same things.
Interesting. So it sounds like we do quite a bit to be able to make sure that our patients are actually getting better from the condition once they actually get it. So Dr. Baugh, once you get sepsis, are people generally more susceptible to getting it again?
That's sort of a two-pronged question and answer there. The short and easy answer is yes. It doesn't necessarily become a chronic disease, so to speak, but you are more susceptible to getting septic once you've had it before. And one of the reasons is because just the pure definition of septic patients or having sepsis really does a toll on your body. It does suppress your immune system, and so that is one part of it. And the other is those people who are maybe already immunocompromised to start with are the ones that are going to have the increased risk of getting septic again.
Interesting. So, Corrine, I guess I have a question for you now. Does the hospital actually track how many cases of sepsis there are? And if you do track it, how do you do that? Is it per week? Is it per month, per quarter, per year?
So, yeah, that's a good question is to know whether or not the hospital is looking at this. And the hospital is. In fact, we track the two most critical progressions of sepsis, which is severe sepsis and septic shock. And we review these cases on a monthly basis, and then we submit our data quarterly to CMS.
And I guess, Corrine, my follow-up question to that is, and you've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but just for our listeners who are just kind of tuning in now, does Good Shepherd actually have a mechanism in place to determine if sepsis was accurately diagnosed?
Yes. So there is a system in place that we can determine whether or not sepsis was diagnosed correctly. And what's really great about it and what I find exciting is when we actually have staff members contacting me, email or calling and saying, hey, I just took care of a septic patient. Will you take a look at this medical record or can you forward it on? And so if there's ever a question about diagnosis, we have the ability to refer those cases to a physician-based medical staff committee, which then determines whether an appropriate diagnosis was actually made.
So there is like a peer group, I guess, at Good Shepherd of medical professionals, physicians, who are reviewing those charts to make sure that if there is a question that comes up, if sepsis was a diagnosis that should have been made or was made, that it was made accurately and everything was done effectively for that patient.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So, Dr. Baugh, I do have a follow-up question for you on that. So is sepsis something our community members need to be afraid of?
You know, this is my thoughts for all of the community that's listening out there. I would not say to be afraid of, but instead to say be aware of. And because what I don't want is I don't want people to live in fear of a disease state that's out there, but instead to realize that there is a disease or there's a state out there that goes from being I'm sick to this becomes more life-threatening. And so as we've already talked about, those things that we should be thinking about are, am I sick? Am I getting sicker? Do I need to see my doctor? And how can I prevent that to start with? Washing my hands, following the basic hygiene things that we already know. So I would say, don't be afraid, be aware.
So Dr. Baugh, you kind of led into my next question here. So is sepsis lifestyle related? Does it only occur in certain kinds of individuals, or does it really just depend on circumstances and environment or condition?
It's sort of both. So if we look at this, we can say that sepsis is more common in certain individuals, but can be found in any spectrum of population. There are risk factors, obviously, that increase the likelihood of you being diagnosed with sepsis, but that's really sort of because those risk factors would increase the likelihood of you being sick or then increasingly sick. Things like, do I have an immunocompromised state? For instance, do I have HIV or AIDS? Do I even have things like diabetes? We know that your immune system is compromised with diabetes. Have I had cancer, or do I currently have cancer? Am I on chemotherapy? Am I older? And we use that term lightly because we talk about even something just past the age of 65, or am I really young? And do our patients under 5 years or older? So, have I previously had a sepsis? Obviously, that increases, and we talked about a little while ago. And then we start talking about, have I previously been hospitalized? Have I been exposed to somebody that has had a bad infection? Do I have any genetic modification or genetic abnormalities that would make me more susceptible to infections? Have I been in the ICU, in the intensive care unit, where I have a likelihood of getting sicker already?
So, Dr. Baugh, I guess another question I have, kind of following up to that question, was, what can our listeners do to prevent themselves from getting sepsis? And I guess you mentioned it early on in our conversation, one thing that medical professionals do to help reduce the risk of infection is hand hygiene. What can our community members do to reduce that as well? Is it something they could do, you know, doing proper hygiene, or what else could they do?
I would say absolutely. And it goes back to the basics, right? So we talk about hand hygiene, but we also talk about being as healthy as you can. So when I say that, we start talking about healthy lifestyles, you know, eat healthy, live an active life, live a healthy life, being active, getting out, getting fresh air, being as active as you can, taking the medications that you're supposed to be taking. But it really does come back to when we start talking about how do I stay healthy and how do I avoid disease, it is proper hand hygiene is by far that number one issue that we talked about. And the others are all basic and sort of supplementary to that, where we say live a healthy lifestyle, eat healthy, be active, and listen to the advice of your physician.
Well, thank you, Dr. Baugh. My last question for you guys today, and this is a question for both Dr. Baugh and Corrine. If there is one thing you would like our listeners to take away from today's conversation about sepsis, what would it be? And I'll start with you, Dr. Baugh.
Yeah, I would think if there's one thing that I'd want people to take away from this conversation, and it's sort of what we just barely talked about, and it's this spectrum of sepsis. One, if you're sick and getting sicker, come to the ER. Let us take care of you. Or call your primary care physician. Get in to see somebody. If you're getting more sick, then don't push it to the back burner. Your health is important. And then the complementary to that is do the things that will help you be healthy before, during, and after any illness. That's washing your hands, maintaining good hygiene, eating healthy, and having a healthy lifestyle.
All right. And Corrine.
Yeah, all those things are so wonderful, what Dr. Baugh said, and so important. And I think I would like to just encourage our listeners that although sepsis is a medical emergency, it is something that can be treated, and they should know the signs and symptoms and seek out care early, like Dr. Baugh said, because we know that the early recognition and proper care are what are really key to actually having our community survive sepsis.
Well, thank you both. So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and today's topic was sepsis. If you're just tuning in now and would like to listen to the whole show, you can go to the Good Shepherd Healthcare System website and search for the podcast, and you can hear all of our past episodes, including today's talk on sepsis. Dr. Baugh and Corrine, I would like to thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.